Our first set of candidates sitting in front of you, Jesse Lazarowicz, the Democrat, and Matt Rosendale, running for state auditor. Which of those first? I forgot. Matt. Okay, Matt, can you, this will not count for your time, explain what the state auditor does, because it's not obvious and the name is somewhat deceptive. So if you can explain what the state auditor does, what its duties are, and then when you're done with that, we'll start running the time.
Very good. I think it's a nasty trick that the state is playing.
You get the mic, too.
Very good. So do you want us over here?
No, just sit down.
I believe that it's a nasty trick that the state has played on the people of Montana. The auditor's office is not responsible for auditing any of the departments. The auditor's office is actually the commissioner of insurance and securities. That's what they're charged with. So the office is going to be the consumer advocate for the insurance and securities industry, take care of licensing, the licensing requirements, the oversight for those departments, and to make sure are those businesses, and to make sure that there's no fraud or crime committed by the people that are trying to sell those products. I personally believe that
that's where we start. I personally believe. Now your time starts.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay, I personally believe that you have to look at the operation in a holistic view and try to take into consideration the regulation that is applied to those businesses, because eventually, if it is too burdensome, it certainly trickles down to the people that are trying to purchase those services and products and cost them additional money as well. So I think that you have to be very careful about applying regulation and or cost to any of the industries that we are set to regulate.
Well, I guess there was still explanation. Restart the clock. Okay. Now start campaigning.
Now you have 3 minutes.
So now I get my 3 minutes, just so we're clear? Okay. Okay. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Matthew Rosendale. Currently, I'm serving as the Senate Majority Leader in the Montana Legislature. I have a ranch. It's about halfway between Glendive and Sydney. I live there with my wife, Jean. We've been married for 31 years. I have 3 grown sons. One actually is running for the legislature in Billings. Prior to having the ranch, I was a real estate broker and developer. I spent many years building a real estate firm. Basically, when I purchased the firm, it was a small mom and pop operation. It was my mom and pop, and I was instrumental in building that into a four office, 65 agent, multi-million dollar operation. Started serving in the legislature in 2010. Was elected to the Senate in 2012, was elected as the Senate Majority Leader in 2014. Over the last 6 years, I've spent an awful lot of time working on issues to try and drive down the cost of insurance products for the people of Montana, whether that be workers' comp, health insurance, and I've not had any support with trying to pass or implement that legislation. Our automobile insurance rates are the 10th highest in the nation. Our workers' compensation insurance rates are the 10th highest in the nation. And everybody has been made very aware of the cost of healthcare that's going to be going up in the next year, anywhere from 30 to 60%. And while the auditor's office does not set any of these rates, and I will agree to that, the auditor's office does set policy. And that policy dramatically impacts the rates of all insurances. And I have tried to pass policy and legislation that would have helped drive those costs down and have not been able to get support from the office or from the governor's office in order to do that. And I think that we need to, when we look at healthcare, for example, I think that instead of taking what was termed last week in the insurance summit as a very serious situation, that we were in a death spiral, or that these are quotes from staff within the auditor's office, that we were the healthiest person in hospice. That is tragic when you start thinking about the state of our health care for the people of this state. And I think that we need to focus our attention on making sure people have good access to health care instead of saying everyone has insurance. Because there's a lot of people that have insurance right now that don't have good access to healthcare because their premiums are so high, because their deductibles are so high, because they've been forced to pick up plans that they did not want. So we need to start looking at the alternatives such as primary care provider agreements, healthcare sharing ministries, and the other alternatives. Thank you very much.
I'm going to stand for... Well, good evening. My name is Jesse Laslovich, and I'm from Anaconda, originally a fourth generation Montanan. My parents, my mom was a teacher, my father was a contractor, and I worked for him operating backhoes and excavators, and it was my motivation, candidly, to go to school, because he was a tough person to work for, but taught me a great work ethic, something that I'm grateful for this day. I ran for and was elected to the legislature representing the people of Anaconda in 2000. I served 4 years in the House of Representatives and then ran for and was elected to the state Senate and served 6 years in the Senate representing Anaconda, Deer Lodge, Powell, and Granite counties. I worked in the Attorney General's office, did consumer protection work for a couple of years, defended criminal convictions before the Montana Supreme Court, and I've been now in the state auditor's office for the last 7 years. This is a really important office. It sounds terrible. It's named inappropriately, but it does profound, profound work for people of the state. And I've been in the trenches the last 7 years doing that work, and I want to continue to do it as your next state auditor in January of next year. What does it mean? What does that mean? If your insurance claim is denied, whether it's a health insurance claim, whether it's an auto claim, whether it's a homeowner's claim, you come to us and we can get that claim paid if the policy's right and the law's on your side. And the proof is in the pudding. Over the last 7 years I've been there, we've averaged between $3 to $6 million annually in claims that were initially denied getting paid. People who were sick went to have a procedure done, and the insurance company said, we're not paying for it. They came to us, and we got the insurance company to pay for it. This is real. Similarly, on the on the security side, where you're investing your money. I just came from Kalispell at a court hearing this afternoon, where we've charged somebody, we've alleged that they've run over a $1 million Ponzi scheme, right in Flathead County. And in cases that I've been directly involved in the last 7 years, recovered over $100 million for victims of fraud in Montana. It's something I'm really, really proud of. And so I think it's important when you're considering who to vote for this office, have somebody who's been in the trenches, who has the experience, who can get the job done for you. And I'm not just standing up here saying, I'll do it. I'm telling you, I know how to do it. It's really, really important. And then the only other thing I'll mention, I'm sure it'll come up because my time is coming to a close, is the land board. The state auditor sits on the land board. I feel very strongly about issues that come before the land board, particularly when it comes to access to our public lands. Senator Rosendale and I have differences on that, and look forward to talking about those in the questions.
Thanks. Let me start with the first question. Since you were the second, you get the first one to answer. No, that's all right. Thank you.
Okay.
You can all hear me, right? Can both of you explain what distinguishes you from your opponent?
Yeah, you bet. So the question is, how much time do I get? So the question is, what do I think distinguishes myself from my opponent? Experience and knowledge of the office. This is unlike many of our offices that we run for. It's highly technical, two very complicated industries. And so if I'm elected in January, I'll be able to hit the ground running. There's no learning curve for me, number one. Number two, I have broad support across Montana, bipartisan support. I'm the only statewide Democrat who's running that's been endorsed by the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Similarly, I've been endorsed by organizations that represent working families. I've been endorsed by people in the conservation community on both sides. And I think it's indicative of my willingness and ability to work with both sides to get things done, that kind of pragmatism that I think you all expect and frankly that you all deserve. And I want to take that to the auditor's office starting in January.
Just set it behind. And then the other one was trip up. Yeah.
Very easy. The first thing I will say is that now that we have seen 5 years of Obamacare and the problems that it's created across the state, the two biggest differences I see is that my opponent here starts talking about a single-payer system. We've got all these problems that they were talking about in the insurance summit last week, and now that we've seen with the government control over a very large segment of the insurance industry, what it has created, and in his own words, it's broken, that we should start working towards a single-payer system, and I think that is the complete opposite way to go. I think we have to utilize these other options for people to make sure they have good access to health care. When it comes to the land board, we want to talk about experience. I have bought, sold, developed, and managed agricultural, residential, and commercial property my entire adult life. And I think that it is critically important that we have someone on the land board that has some kind of background on land management.
Thanks. Questions?
You get the first one.
Ken, I knew I could hit on you.
Yeah, Bob's only going to let me ask one, so I'm going to try to blend two questions into one.
Do I get 4 minutes then?
My wife about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, got T-boned by a driver out here on E3. Fortunately, nobody was hurt. The woman had no insurance. I understand it's against the law in Montana to drive without insurance. So she was arrested, of course, but I ended up paying 100% of my deductible because she didn't have any insurance to pay for. She has since paid $200 toward that, and we're going to get no more. That doesn't bother me so much as the fact that...
You need to ask a question.
Well, it's coming. Okay. Patient's coming. So the idea is I have to pay uninsured motorists on every vehicle that I have. I can only drive one at a time, but I pay uninsured motorists on every vehicle I have to cover someone that is illegal. What are you going to do about that?
Well, move. That is a good question. That's something that we've been working on in the legislature since I've been there. And that is so the Department of Justice has the ability to immediately identify when someone's trying to renew license plates or if they get stopped, to be able to identify that they do or do not have insurance. And that is a really big thing. But they've been working on this plan for quite some time now. And as far as your insurance products that you purchase for your vehicles, it's going to be very difficult to try and say, we're only going to charge you this for one vehicle. We also go into this conversation about, I can only drive one vehicle at a time, so why do I have to pay full insurance for all these vehicles? Well, unless we put a monitoring device on you to find out exactly when you're driving that specific vehicle, then you're going to end up having to pay for the insurance for all of the vehicles. The uninsured motorists, though, that is something that the Department of Justice has been working on to try and identify quickly through their different licensing procedures and through their stops with the police to make sure they can identify immediately.
So your question was, you're frustrated that you're paying a part of your premium for uninsured motorist coverage.
Because I'm paying...
Right, for all your vehicles.
All my vehicles, right. I can only drive one, but I'm paying a premium on all my vehicles for someone to break the law.
Right, yeah.
And with the computers we have right now, devices should go away.
Yeah, so there are two parts to that answer. The enforceability piece, so when you're driving... without insurance, that is your county attorney who's in the deputy county attorneys who are prosecuting those, need to prosecute those. And the second part of your question is the uninsured motorist coverage, a part of your insurance policy, is a big part of the premium that you're paying. And it's the first I've heard the idea candidly of combining, if I heard you correctly, combining everything. So you're just paying it one time for all your vehicles rather than on each vehicle.
You don't drive one.
Yeah, so I will commit to you to, right now, I'm in the office to talking with our insurance companies about the possibility of doing that and making that happen for you. I think that's reasonable. I do want to say, since I have a few minutes on the single payer piece, it's a flat misrepresentation to say that I called for a single payer system. The system is broken, and we need to have serious discussions about proposed solutions. And to say that my proposed solution is a single payer system is like saying that I have a bunch of hair on my head. It's not true.
Okay, Fred Jellison, CBV. What's the penalty if I'm caught driving with no insurance? Do you take the license plates off my vehicle? Do you take my driver's license away? What's the penalty if I'm stopped out here for a broken taillight and they find out I don't have any insurance on my vehicle? Do you take my license plates off the vehicle right there on the spot, like they do in some states? Do they take the driver's license away?
No. I want to clarify this. The auditor's office isn't the, when you say you, it's not the auditor's office that's doing this. It's your law enforcement and your local county attorneys who are doing it. And my understanding is similar. It's a misdemeanor, and so a misdemeanor, Montana, it's up to 6 months in jail. No one's going to jail. My understanding, judges aren't sentencing people to jail for not having insurance, and you pay a fine. I'm not aware of the license plates being taken right on the spot, but I think you're cited. And if you bring proof of insurance that you had at the time, you bring it into the judge and say, here, I had it, I just didn't have it on me, and the judge will dismiss it. But if you didn't have it, then candidly, I think the only penalty now is a fine and court fees.
And that is true. That's under law enforcement. But the Highway Patrol and law enforcement does have the ability now to get electronic verification of your insurance. So even if you're not carrying your card, they do have the ability to identify right now on the spot if you have insurance or not. And then if there was, for some reason, did not translate through and it was showing up that you did not have insurance, but in fact you did have insurance, then you are able to go to the JP and show proof of that insurance and have that ticket forgiven. But in all reality, if you're stopped at that time and the law enforcement looks on the information and you do not have proof of insurance, you shouldn't be driving. They should make you park that vehicle right then because you're at risk for yourself and for other people, as we discussed earlier this evening.
Yes.
So, state landlord, what do you guys think about the state lease lots that have subpar septic systems that are located along waterways? They were originally meant to be recreational cabins, but of course a lot of those are being permanently lived in now. What do you think the state's responsibility is to cleaning up that issue and sorting that out?
That the state cabin lease is a really, really big issue. And again, I've been working with the cabin lease organization for the last 6 years. And what happened is the state has incentivized people to make substantial improvements on these parcels. And then they ended up raising the leases so that it made it unrealistic for them to be able to pay that and stay on that property. So they created this, the state created this issue. And so we've been, for the last three sessions, trying to work through resolutions. Some we were trying to reduce leases, but that's all based on market value. We were able to offer some of those properties for sale so that the folks that had made enormous investments were able to cover that. And then as far as something that's unsanitary, this is the first time that I've heard of that. But I can tell you, if the state has allowed someone to get into a situation where they have a septic or sewage disposal system that is not working properly, then they need to work with them to make sure that they have a containment system or provide some type of low interest loans that they can put a proper facility in there to accommodate that septic effluent.
Yeah, the so I actually installed sewer systems for my father. I know it doesn't seem like that with me standing up here in a suit. It's especially when you're near water, as you say in your question, it can be an expensive endeavor. It's important, critical, at least from my perspective, that the state work closely with those leaseholders to get it fixed. I similarly, it's the first I've heard of this issue as well, and that specifically is the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. So it can't be the DNRC saying this is what's going to happen. It needs to be a collaborative approach with those leaseholders. And if it is in fact as a result of actions of the state, then there's some responsibility on the state side. And if it's shared, then we need to do it in a shared way, in a collaborative way, to see if we can update those systems in a cost-effective and, most importantly, effective way.
We have time for one more. Ken.
You're elected next January. What is job one for the auditor's office?
Great question. So for me, immediately you're working with the legislature. And so two things for me that I've been talking about. So you have the day-to-day work, but at least with the legislature, more pricing transparency in our healthcare system. Been talking about this for the last year and a half, where we should know as prospective patients for non-emergency procedures what the cost is prior to going to the hospital rather than after the fact when we get our explanation of benefits. Why is that important? Because cost is a huge part of the skyrocketing premiums that all of us are paying. I've been working with our providers to try to put something together that'll pass next legislative session. I've been talking with Republicans who are supportive of it too. And the second thing is, I've been immersed in the air ambulance issue, and folks here in Seeley Lake are exposed to this, where you have out-of-network air ambulance providers. They're not in the insurance company networks, and they're getting exorbitant balance bills. And I've been helping family after family try to reduce the burden of those balance bills. But it's not enough. It shouldn't be a piecemeal approach. We need legislation. We've proposed legislation to get the burden off of the families and put it with the insurance company, their ambulance provider. So those two things are things I'll be working on immediately in January.
Thank you.
I've already met with several legislators that are holdover senators to put a couple of bill draft requests in. And again, this is to bring through the primary care provider agreement that I was able to get passed in the 2015 session. And that, we talk about transparency, this is something that did go through. It's something that the Senate passed, it's something that the House passed, and it's something that the governor vetoed. So I always find it amusing when people talk about these things that they're going to do, that when we proposed it a year ago, everybody was against it. And the auditor's office did not come in and support that. That would provide, starting at the physician's level, a list of services and the costs associated with those services, allow folks to enter into agreements with their physicians, and then have either a monthly or an annual retainer fee, put them in a position that they could buy a much less expensive, catastrophic health plan on the side. And then folks with high blood pressure, diabetes, that have regular maintenance, it would work very, very well for them. We're gonna work on healthcare sharing ministries. I'm tired of listening to the radio where I hear MediShare do an advertisement, they say not available in Montana, and they're available in 49 other states. And I have a couple of other bill drafts in as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Okay, closing statements.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's So I'm just gonna, hold on, 2 minutes. So I'm gonna conclude, pick up on the two concepts that Senator Rosendale talked about. Provider agreements, you're paying separate, we have insurance, so that when we have a medical issue, our insurance should kick in. You shouldn't have to pay separately the provider directly to be able to have access to that provider. It's ridiculous. And then the second piece on healthcare sharing ministries, it's for good reason, ladies and gentlemen, that they can't be here. We've had significant problems because it's not insurance. People are part of the healthcare sharing ministry. They have a medical episode, and then they reach out to everybody else in the ministry to pay money for that procedure, and then people don't pay. That's not insurance. And so it's giving people false hope that they actually are going to have coverage when in fact they won't have any coverage. So don't buy the argument that healthcare sharing ministries are going to be good for you. They're not. because you won't have the access, or you won't have the ultimate coverage after you access the system. I've lived and breathed this work for the last 7 years. This office is in my heart. I'm doing this because I want to continue to do the work, and I think it's so important that you have somebody who's been fighting for you in the trenches for the last 7 years, taking that experience to lead the office. And it's not just about experience, it's about judgment too. And the organizations that have endorsed my candidacy, who represent businesses, who represent consumers, all say that I should be your next state auditor. And so I'm standing up in front of you and here in Sealy Lake and respectfully requesting that you vote for me when the absentee ballots come out, if you're an absentee voter, and if not, on November 8th. I want to continue the really important work that I've been privileged to be a part of starting in January. Thank you.
Again, I would just like to reiterate, automobile insurance rates in Montana are the second highest in the nation. Workers' compensation insurance rates in Montana are the 10th highest in the nation. Our health care rates are absolutely skyrocketing. And this office is responsible for the policies that drive those costs. I have worked for the last 6 years to try to implement different alternatives and options that would help drive those costs down, and I have not had any assistance from the auditor's office or any support from the governor's office. It is time that we have some changes. I would like to get back to the land use as well. The land board manages 5.2 million acres of school trust lands, and the revenue that is generated from those lands goes to fund the bulk of it towards our K-12 education system. And anything that is not produced by those lands then is made up in your property taxes. So it will impact every single person somehow or another across the state. We have got to have someone on that board that has some background in proper land management. Right now, we have the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation that brings plans in, and fortunately, they have done a fairly good job. But I can tell you, there are sections of land around our state that right now are not generating any revenue because of the way that they've been handled. No revenue. There are sections of land across the state that generate just a portion, a fraction of what they should be generating. And there's other ones that the leaseholders, agricultural leases, are paying exorbitant amounts. We have to have someone in there that understands the difference between the variables that are involved with the land use. And they have to make sure that they manage the land in such a fashion that it's not degraded. Because I will also tell you that we are going to rely, talk about access. I support unequivocally access, and we're going to depend more on our state lands for access because they are closing off access to our federal lands. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming out.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you.